people you love, play five songs they love, and tell you why.
Where do I begin with Kylie Minogue? She's been in our lives for over three decades. She's sold more than 70 million records worldwide, holds multiple ARIA and Brit Awards, and a Grammy. Over 15 studio albums, countless tours, and plenty of other side hustles, she's become one of the most legendary Australians alive. She's just Kylie, our Kylie, and she's an icon. Kylie might be the reason you're listening to this Take 5, so if you're new to the podcast, welcome. The idea is simple. It's the people you love sharing five songs they love. Every guest gets a different theme, and over the 15 years we've been doing it, everyone from Roisin Murphy to Mark Ronson, Tori Amos to Jessie Ware, Jake Shears to Christine and the Queens, even Sir Paul McCartney has done one. You can hear all of them right here on the podcast. No doubt, like many of you, I grew up with Kylie Minogue. Her new albums would be on every Christmas and birthday wish list. And as I got older and opened up my worldview, so did she, broadening her sound to indie music, taking on country pop, and collaborating with everyone from Nick Cave to Robbie Williams to The Wiggles. But disco has always been in her back pocket. And in 2020, she returned to the Studio 54 dance floor with a glittering new album of classic dance. On the day disco was released, Kylie joined me to Take 5 with her disco ball, sharing the songs that had inspired her over the years and in the making of her 15th album. Releasing records is old hat for Kylie, so before we got into her song choices, I wanted to know if she still got excited about album release days.
Yes, very much so. With this, I mean, it felt like this day would never arrive. This year has just been so peculiar. I think everyone's concept of time is so skewed. You know, was it this morning or was it 6 months ago that I said that to you? You know, so it feels like quite a long wait for disco to finally arrive. Maybe it's felt longer because, you know, we have mostly been home now. Different areas are having their second lockdowns. But yeah, it's finally here. So it's exciting. It's a little nerve-wracking. I'm kind of waiting for the relief of just letting go and letting the songs do their own thing. You know, we go round and round and talk in circles till we're blue in the face about what do we think people are going to like? What's going to be their favorite? How are they going to react? But you just never know until it's out there. And then when you hear it on the radio, I promise you that's a whole different sensation.
You made this record partly in lockdown too. So you were quite isolated when you were creating this new record, weren't you?
Yeah. I started work on it late last year in the, you know, the olden days of being in a studio, and then carried on February and March, or the start of March. And I think because we'd really reached our, or like found our groove with the concept and the title and like a small clutch full of songs that we thought these ones are keepers. We just need like 100 more to try and get 8 more great ones. So we'd found our flow in the studio, then lockdown closed its mighty doors. Those first few weeks were so weird and silent and anxious and all the things that everyone was going through. And eventually it looked like this was going to be the way for a while. So, yes, I took my baby steps of using just a mic that I happened to have in the house and had never used, a very basic interface, started on GarageBand, and I was thinking if teenagers can do this in their bedroom, or you know, even under 10s, come on Minogue, you've got to be able to figure this out. So yeah, I took my tentative first steps doing that, and then ordered in the stuff that I needed, and you know, no real rocket science, but me trying to wrangle all of this stuff when it finally arrived was pretty amusing in retrospect.
awesome, though, that, you know, 15 records into your career, you're now self-recording, you get an engineering credit on this record, and rightfully so. Like, that's pretty awesome. Well,
first, I said it as a complete joke. And the further, you know, the more and more hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours I spent at home doing remote recording with producers or recording my own vocals and getting those vocals to them. In the end, I thought, hang on a second, I did a lot of, yes, I am giving myself additional vocal engineer credit, as much as anything to remind myself in the future what an experience this was.
Let's get into it. Your first choice is a steamy song, Kylie. We're going back to 1975. Tell me about why you chose Donna Summer and Love to Love You Baby. This is epic.
Because there are a sum total of zero reasons not to choose this song. I mean, it is so epic, so steamy, as you say. So, okay, 1975, I kind of think, 78, I was 10 years old in 78, and that's when I was, I'd say kind of 8, 9, 10 years old, figured out how to use the record player, and I had my parents' record stack, which had different sorts of music. We had the Beatles and Stones and Bonnie Tyler, the Kinks, the ones that come to mind. Stevie Wonder, for sure. That was the parents' dinner party favorite double album. Easy choice. Very superstitious. But amongst those was Donna Summer, Bad Girls. So that must have been after Love to Love You Baby. Mm. So it was Bad Girls that I played on repeat, way too young an age, really, probably to be listening to Bad Girls. But over time, Love to Love You Baby is just, I try to imagine what it was like to have made that and to have heard that as a punter, as a listener for the first time. It must have just been mind-blowing. And I ended up working with Giorgio Moroder. He came on tour with me in Australia, so I got to meet the great man himself and just, trip over myself with gratitude and respect at everything, you know, all the work his credits, his list of work and the seismic shift in the music industry. It was just unreal. So, yep, that's pretty much a lot of my Donna Summer story. Oh, there's one more. My first demo that I ever recorded, I was 17, and I recorded three songs, not so much to become a singer. It was more that I could maybe have more chance of getting an acting job if I had a cassette to show that I could sing. But one of those songs was Dim All the Lights by Donna Summer.
Amazing.
Yes, I've got a bit of a Donna Summer crush, but Love to Love You Baby is just an all-time epic classic.
It's a song that was banned at the time by many radio networks, and I think that if you've forgotten how it sounds, you're going to be soon reminded why. 23 orgasmic sounds running through this 13-minute epic.
Is it? Well, I'll have what she's having. This next one is Earth, Wind & Fire with September.
Do you remember when it first died? September, love was changing the minds. Tender, wild change. biggest hit? Why did you choose it? How does this fit into your disco ball?
Yeah, firstly, I love it. And it's no surprise it's their biggest hit. And you know what? I didn't listen to too much disco through making this record. It was more referencing songs that were just in my system because they've been in my life for a long time. Even songs that have kind of passed their peak, but they are still played at parties, weddings, celebrations. You're going to have We Are Family. You're going to have, you know, Chic or Sly and the Family Stone, or the list goes on and on. But Earth, Wind and Fire and September, there's a song that didn't make it on my album. We loved it as a song, but it was just, it was written pre-committing to the disco concept. So we tried to rejig it. And one of the things I did was look up September on YouTube, listen to that. And then I looked up just to get the vibe. I was trying to explain how we could maybe rework this song to fit the agenda. Therefore, I listened to September. I listened to some backing versions of September and was able to kind of, just as a guide, not to rip that off, but just to see if any of these lyrics or content would work in this world. It didn't. But it did remind me how awesome that song was. And the other reason I would, in this case, not listen to September, but during the remote sessions, if it was veering, you know, once we're recording, we know what we're doing. But when it was more of the writing, and if it would kind of veer off to be a bit more too electronic or a bit too dance as opposed to disco dance, I would quickly get my phone, YouTube, Earth, Wind and Fire, actually any Earth, Wind and Fire, and just thrust the frame of my phone to the camera on Zoom or whatever we were on. I said, just look at this, just look at the colors, look at the vibe, look how they're feeling, just that kind of the looseness and the abandon. And how, I don't know if they thought they were amazing, but it looks like they thought they were amazing. So I just wanted to remind my co-writers that, you know, just somewhere in this world, not trapped in the 70s, not really, didn't want to go anywhere near a pastiche version of Flares and I don't know whatever else. But yeah, so Earth, Wind and Fire, I did spend a little bit of time with them, and then just last week I performed September for BBC Radio 2 acoustic set.
Amazing.
And I don't know if anyone actually knows the lyrics to September. I certainly didn't. I had no idea. And I don't trust Google lyrics that much either. So I hope I got the lyrics right. But it was like, oh, well, that's what they're saying. Cool. That's what they're saying. I get it. A lot of ba-di-da.
Yeah, a lot of ba-di-da.
And then da-dun-da. It was just another little challenge of, you know, when there's a song with just such all-time irreplaceable vocals and timing, and actually looking into that song, I don't think the timing is, it's not like now where you can have quantized timing. You can have everything very neat and perfectly in time. One of my producers was saying, when we were talking about covering September, he said, yeah, I tried to quantize it and it just sounds completely wrong. So there's that looseness and the live feeling to that song that's so epic. It would have been probably one take on everyone's part altogether. So when I did my cover of it, yes, I had my cheat sheet lyrics because I really did not learn the lyrics till, not, I didn't learn them at all, but I didn't, hadn't got them in my head till that morning. But yeah, just tried to get my version of it and keep some of the looseness within the performance. It was fun.
It's a hit for a reason. It's a dance floor filler for a reason. It's also one of those disco songs that was a huge crossover hit worldwide, you know, to this day. Like you say, it's on every wedding playlist. But for, I guess for a lot of disco, if we're talking more broadly about the realm of disco, this was really born of a group of people who were, you know, marginalized, who didn't have a voice, who found community in the club, beyond just the music and the sound of it. Do you kind of reflect, knowing your love of disco through your whole career, do you reflect on those foundations and what they built?
Absolutely. And in talking about disco, now with a lot of people and the state of the world. I think there's, and well, when I say talking with people, a lot of my conversations these past couple of weeks are saying, well, there's a big appreciation for disco right now. Not many people have heard my album, but with Jessie Ware, Dua Lipa, Miley Cyrus, lots of people who are having success with disco. And it seems that there may be, I don't know if this is being too dreamlike or romanticizing or if it's too much of a long stretch, but it feels like there could be a correlation between what you're talking about and the birth of disco and people having to sing and dance and dress and make their way to a safe place. I know it can sound trite to kind of dance your troubles away, but there's some truth to that, to losing yourself and giving into the abandon. That's what I wanted to remind my co-writers of. And then it's made me think more about disco being dressed in sequins and glitter and glamour. But so much of that was escapism and through hardship and trying to feel like you're lighter than air and you're transcending the world that you're trying to escape. So there's a lot that's milling around in my mind that I didn't necessarily think of making the album, but I think subliminally it was there, and now I'm actually having to verbalize it. Might not be verbalizing it very well, but I think it's there, that need to escape and to give people some comfort that when the light goes on that disco ball, it doesn't just light you, it lights the room, it lights everybody, and the light carries on.
I just got a little bit teary. I'm sorry
if it sounds a bit, I'm really not trying to romanticize it. I just think there's some, as you say, a lot of, I will survive Gloria Gaynor. She is singing for her life. She is finding a way out of that situation. And there's so many examples like that.
Well, let's get into that song because time is of the essence. I know you have to do other.
Oh, that is the next song.
That is the next song.
I didn't realize. Amazing. But then I spent so many nights thinking how you did me wrong, and I grew strong, and I learned how to get along.
Again, from heartache comes great strength on this song. Tell us about this. Also a massive anthem for the queer and black community, Gloria Gaynor, I Will Survive.
And then became an anthem for anyone who needed it. And going on from what we're just talking about, you can either hear these songs and appreciate them and dance along and do your dance moves and enjoy and celebrate. But I am quite sure that somewhere underneath there, you recognize that this is, you're either feeling good because you're not in that moment, or if you need to find solace in a song, feel less alone, a song like this can do that. Most people will be overdoing this song and it's like the punch the sky, that's probably what I would be doing if I'm honest. But it's so strong and it's has stood the test of time, and it's another one on this list that will always, always, always be played. This next song is Bee Gees' Night Fever.
Kylie is taking five today.
Come on. Bee Gees.
I love that you just pumped to talk about this.
I'm so pumped to talk about the Bee Gees. Oh my gosh. This is going to be a slight segue because it just comes to my mind. A friend of mine sent me the ABBA movie that was probably from about the same year. So ABBA were, as we all know, Australia was one of their first massive international markets. And there's a film that I had never seen until this year, which is incredible. I don't even know what it's called. It's just amazing. But there's one part in the film. It's kind of like a drama documentary. Some of it's real and some of it is scripted. Anyhow, there's a point where, and I'm probably going to misquote this, but where a journalist or a critic is saying, if you dismantle an ABBA song, take all the pieces apart, you will put it back together the same way, meaning it's absolute perfection. And I almost had an ABBA song in this Take Five list, but I could feel the same way about Bee Gees' Night Fever, for sure. It just, you cannot imagine it any other way. I have covered this song. I covered it for a French album that was all about Night Fever. And interestingly, I recorded it with Stuart Price, who's an awesome producer.
Yeah.
When we did it straight up, it was not, we both kind of went, well, yeah, that's that, but so what? And I think that's because my falsetto, that's quite an easy place for me to be. But when it's a man singing that falsetto, it gives it that otherworldly, just wow qualities. I think we raised it up maybe at least a semitone, maybe a tone, just to try and give it that extra, well, to aim to be anything near as captivating as the original was. But yeah, it's just a classic.
An amazing song from the Gibb Brothers, a legendary moment in disco. And today we've been dancing in a lot of disco. You know, this is something that you have traded in before, but you've also worked in pop music for many years, in indie and balladry. You know, with any of these kind of incarnations that you dive into throughout your incredible career over the last three decades, is it always a gut instinct when you're following a new adventure?
Yes, which doesn't always mean it's correct, but I follow it anyway. In fact, I would say it's more often right if I do follow it than if I do something that's, there's a bit of a niggle inside me going, I'm not sure, but you're all telling, yes, maybe you're right. You know, I don't think it's good not to listen to other people, but I think it is much better if, even if it goes wrong, at least if it was your gut instinct and you fully committed and you went for it. To go back to disco now, well, to commit to it this wholly, I know that the seed was planted in 2018 on the Golden Tour, which seems kind of weird because that was the tour for an album that had the country influence, but there was a section in the Golden Tour which was our fantasy version of Studio 54, and I absolutely loved being there. It was the last section of the show. We had, you know, so you've kind of got your adrenaline going and you think, this is it. This is the final push. We're going to make it to the end. Encore is just a dream. You're so kind of nearly done that the encore is, you can ride on the energy of the crowd. But this last section, I would come through the Studio 54 doors on stage in the gold dress, and my singers and my dancers, they all had these attitude and the look and the way they would move. And we're just pretending that we're at Studio 54. Of course, none of us were. We can never be. But I think Studio 54, its imagery, its the songs, its history has that kind of pull and that power that you can almost feel like you were. I mean, it's in your imagination, but you can dream that you were there. So at that point in time, I knew I wanted to spend more time in that place. So that's why I came to disco on this album. Has thus far been a lifelong love affair, and I'm sure it will continue. I'm also sure that if I have the opportunity and that good fortune comes my way, I'd love to, you know, I always like to try new things. I don't know what will be next. I don't really think it will be, this album is disco, the last one was country pop. I don't think it will necessarily be another blah blah album. Like it's the polka album or the Whatever. I have a feeling the next one might be looser, but I have enjoyed both with Golden and Disco to really try and stay on the path. Use every lane of the highway, but stay on that highway.
I'm always there on the highway with you, Kylie. I get so excited every single record you release. We've been living in 1978 for a while, but we're up to your last song. We're going to jump ahead almost 20 years. You're finishing with a modern classic.
I was trying to think of any point in time where someone reinvented disco, and it has to be Daft Punk. Yeah. I remember, I think I nearly wore my CD out, honestly, between Daft Punk and Air. I just played them all the time. I think they were kind of similar times, or at least when I had a CD collection. But yeah, Daft Punk remaining mysterious, taking over the world, giving us almost as if visually, I don't know, Kraftwerk met disco or something. It was totally delicious and energizing. And that's why it's made my take five.
I can hear some Daft Punk moments in your record too, particularly with like Real Groove and Dance Floor Darling and even Miss a Thing. I can hear that kind of French influence coming through.
Yeah, well, Real Groove and Miss a Thing are by a beautiful guy who I only know from the waist up in screen form. And I was working with him. Of course, I was at my house in London and he was at his house in Finland. But Timo Brunilla is his name, and he is a singer from time to time. He used to be in a band as well. And he has this incredible, not only musicality, obviously, but a naturally quirky sensibility that he's not French, but it's a touch of something. So it's interesting you mentioned those songs.
They're all brilliant. I love this record, and I love that you're finishing with Daft Punk. Kylie Minogue, what an honour to speak with you today and Take Five. Thank you so much for joining us on Double J.
Thank you. I have my smile. I'm grinning from ear to ear. It was absolutely lovely speaking with you. I feel like I'm able to kind of reach out and touch Australia speaking with you. So that's filling me with joy as well. This was so much fun. Well, actually, it was fun. I normally hate making lists of songs. It's too painful. It's too difficult. And the commitment is too real. But I'm happy with the five that I've managed to commit to on this take five. So thank you so much.
You smashed it out of the park, mate. Thank you, Kylie.
Thank you. Take care.
Daft Punk with their modern classic Around the World. And what a wonderful trip around the globe of disco with the legendary Kylie Minogue. That was a total bucket list for me, and I could have spoken to her for a whole lot longer. Thank you, Kylie, for being so generous with your stories and with your record collection. If this is your first visit, I hope you come back again. There are plenty more conversations just like that with some incredible music makers. Next time, it's NAIDOC Week. And we're celebrating the history, culture, and achievements of our First Nations Australians as we take five with writer, director, actor, comedian, and passionate foodie Bjorn Stewart, who'll be serving up the full course over five songs. I'll see you then.
Take Five!
The Take Five with Zan Rowe. Every week, hear the people you love.
Hi, I'm Joan Jett.
Hey, this is Nana Cherry,
and I'm taking five.
Talk about the five songs they love. Hear stories of discovery.
And I heard this thing coming out of the speakers. I was like, oh my God, what is that noise? Wow.
And the songs that changed how they saw the world.
It just affected me deeply. I never knew rap could be that powerful.
It's like a jungle. Join Zan Rowe and Take Five.
Life 101 with Kimber and Zan. Pull up a chair.
Subscribe now.